Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello, it's the Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and James Howard, and DR Kurnaz of Back of the Nest. And gents, we did our best. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, AWB, average wing back. We've been keeping him quiet all season, and somehow United have found out about him. How did that happen?
Another week, another way to start the show. Wan-Bissaka, yes. I don't know. Maybe he's just, I don't know, he might be better than average.
Just slightly.
Yeah, just slightly.
Just
I think.
Slightly.
Yeah.
Might have a bit of potential,
yeah.
This kid.
Yeah, they're saying 50 million, so I guess so.
We're all thinking that Zaha was going to go, and look what happens.
I feel like...
They could both
yeah.
go.
I mean,
oh, no, don't say that.
Yeah, worst thing that could happen this summer, both of them going. But I feel like every week my opinion changes because of the rumours that are coming apart. So last week it was 35 million plus 15 million add-ons, something like that. And now this week it seems like it's still not agreed yet, but it's edging closer. And from what's happened with Wan-Bissaka being dropped from the England under 21 squad, basically being on after that horrendous performance, and how it's going about, I feel like it is going to happen.
Well, was there a part of you watching him be awful against the French under 21s and then score a 95th minute own goal to lose the game, thinking, go on, my son? Because if he plays yeah. the first four games of next season like that, no one's going to be interested.
Oh, that's true. And I did have a thought that crossed my mind for about 2 seconds. But then I thought, well, hold on a second, but this is a player that's played consistently well all season, and that's one mistake.
People are fickle, though.
They are. But, you know, to be quite honest with you, I looked at it and I took a positive out of it and thought, do you know what, that might put Man United off and he might come back, actually stay with us.
Well, unfortunately, no. They're still pursuing him. That's what it seems like. And you could see he's still a young player, and the way he played, and I don't think it's a coincidence that he had a shocker like that and then as a result was dropped. I don't know if it was right if it was dropped, but the rumours are clearly, I think, getting to him. Man United is a big club and this could be a massive step for him, and I feel like that's just affected his performance.
Do you think he's the kind of lad who could have his head turned?
I don't think so. But it's just hard to tell because he's not a type of player who's very vocal on social media and off the pitch. So it's very hard to tell. He seems like a quiet person who just cares about his football. And there was reports, I believe, that saying that he doesn't mind staying at Palace. So if he doesn't mind...
Doesn't sound massively positive, though.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I don't mind if I burn my finger on the
other.
Yeah,
I feel like he's not... It's not pushing deal. You know, not pushing the deal to go through. He's whatever happens. Of course, if I was in his position, I'll be happy as well. In a way, if I'm going to play for one of the biggest clubs, you know, in the world, so I feel like he's a very calm person.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest that he's being very, very diplomatic about it, and he's quite young, and he's. He doesn't react in any bad way on the pitch or off the pitch. And I think he's quietly doing his business. And he's thinking, you know, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go in the right manner. Yeah. And if he does go, you know, all the best to him. But I know Palace are playing hardball on this. And they're not going to accept anything less than probably about 50, 55 million cash up front.
But this is really encouraging, right? And Gary Neville came out and said this a few weeks ago, where basically the era of the Premier League big boys being able to bully mid-table clubs in the transfer market seems to be over. They can still sign the players, Maguire to City, but Maguire's going to cost 80 mil. Mm-hmm. Wan-Bissaka's going to cost 55 mil. Finally, they're having to pay the value of the player.
Yeah, there's no reason for us to sell Wan-Bissaka. Of course, in financial perspective, it would be nice if you do get the 50 million. But even if we sell Wan-Bissaka, if you're looking at the wage and how much players earn, he's not one of the highest earners in the club. So it won't impact that. And that's what's been our main struggle. But yeah, there's no reason for us to sell Wan-Bissaka. And I like what the club are doing and just asking for United to actually pay the 50 million, other than say 35 million plus 50 million if they win the Champions League, which right now it does not seem like a possibility.
Well, let's talk about this clause, because I read it and I thought it was frankly disrespectful. What was your response?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to happen. I mean, Man United are not in the Champions League anyway, so it's going to be a struggle for an English team, as it has been over many years.
30 mil if United win La Liga.
Yeah, exactly.
So I won't be surprised if they put that in.
I'm more than happy. He's got 3 years left on his contract, and you know, we just need to think about this very carefully and say, look, you know, what do we value him now? And I get the point that he's a fullback. I get the point that he's only had one season in the Premiership. So he won't go for, you know, the likes of 80 million, 90 million. And I appreciate that. But, you know, if we are going to let him go, we're certainly not going to let him go for less than what I would have said, 60 million. But if they let him go for 55, you know, what's 5 million between you and me, Johnny, eh?
Between friends, exactly. I've got that behind the sofa.
Exactly. But in a way, we're lucky that Wan-Bissaka is that quiet kind of person. I'm not pushing it as if it was someone else. And right now, United may have actually got Wan-Bissaka because he could have pushed the deal through. So I feel like even if Wan-Bissaka doesn't get sold, he just returns to who he was and continues to play his football, and that's a huge bonus for us.
Well, but there is the flip side of the coin is that he's only had one season, so there is the risk that he has a poor season or gets injured or has a sustained amount of time out of the team. Who knows? He's still very young, still learning his trade. There's still some questions out there. A lot of people are saying, what is he like going forward? Does he get enough crosses in? I don't think he does. I think he's exceptionally talented at defending, probably the best fullback in the country. But going forward and getting crosses in, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I was like that as well earlier on in the season. But I feel like as the season went on, he improved.
He's improving.
Yeah,
definitely.
He's improving.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
If let's say we do keep him, I've said this last week, we could potentially set him on for even more than 50 million, which is a rumoured valuation from us. So there's no real, I don't want to say no real loss. Let's say if United don't pay 50 million, then next season his value would increase.
Okay, but if you don't sell him and then he breaks his leg in four places.
Exactly. Well, there's always that as well, but
so that's why you have to, you can't take 35 million.
Yeah, that's just insulting.
And assume that Man United are going to win the Champions League, because that ain't going to happen. Sorry, Man United fans, if you're listening, but that's not going to happen in the near future. But yeah, you might take 55 million. But in a season's time, if he has another really good season and he has a regular spot in the England team, then he could well be worth 70, 80 million. And then we're sitting on an increased profit.
So it's a win-win.
What about if you sell him for 50 million and you put a clause in that says we get 5% of whatever you sell him for? So if he does end up at Real Madrid for 120, you get another little payout at that point.
Yeah, that would be good. I don't know if United will be willing to do that. But I guess if he's continue playing hardball, and I'm not too sure what's discussed in the negotiations, if that's put out there, then maybe they would be willing to do that. 5% is a lot.
Even 1%.
Well, you're pushing now. What's the point of having 1%?
That's another million, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, if we're in the Premier League, I doubt that would be that significant. But yeah, something like that would be nice.
But the thing is that the news has gone a bit quiet on it, hasn't it? And it seems to be...
It's just
reports,
up and down.
But I don't know.
It's just up and down.
Sure.
It seems like it's getting closer and...
It's a bit of a stalemate, I think. Yeah. Bit of a stalemate at the moment,
I think. The thing about it is United are going to sign a right-back this window, right? Because Solskjaer has clearly looked at Diogo Dalo and gone, not for me. Not yet, anyway. Mm. Valencia's too old. So just because it's gone quiet on this deal, I think until you start hearing United linked with a right-back other than Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you can't relax.
Yeah, I still feel like it's going to happen, but if it does happen, it'll be nice that it happens before pre-season starts in a way so that Wan-Bissaka, when he's with the players, his head is not turned, and if he is going to leave, he could be at his new club and we could just start fresh. That's what I hope for.
Is Aaron Wan-Bissaka off to United? Get in touch. 0208 70 20 558 is the number to call or WhatsApp. I want to talk about another transfer rumour. One player who could be coming into the club, Mignolet. Mignolet.
Yeah.
Firstly, before we get into anything to do with the man himself, the great man, do you need a goalkeeper?
No.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this just before, and you know, we've got two good goalkeepers, Hennessy and Gaeta.
Yeah.
Do you really want to splash out that much money? Was it 8 million?
Yeah, 8 million.
On a potentially, you know, second or third place keeper. Is there not somebody that is coming through the academy that we can kind of rely on just in case the two keepers get injured?
Yeah, let's say if there isn't, you could still go for someone younger, abroad, someone who has potential, and go and get them on a cheap deal rather than Simon Mignolet, who's in his prime.
Decent wages. Crossed,
yeah, decent wages. There's no point. Mm. Right now, it's not like we're in a brilliant position. I wouldn't want us to go for Mignolet, whereas we could invest that money in other areas.
Yeah, I'd like to redirect that money on positions in the team that we need to really improve on. And I don't know the rules now, and I haven't looked them up, but, you know, there must be rules on emergency goalkeepers if you know, one or two.
There's leeway made for a loan deal.
Yeah, so you know, it's not the end of the world if we don't sign the third keeper or we use an academy player as a third keeper. That's what we've always... I feel like that's what we've generally done in the past.
The only thing that makes sense is that, let's say these rumours are true, is the fact that maybe we're looking to sell one of Hennessy or Gaeta.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard of anything. There's been no reports of it, but I guess that's the only way which I'll be like, okay, fair enough, 8 million for Mignolet, it might be worth a shout. But other than that, if both Hennessy and Gaeta are staying, there's no point of investing that much money on a potentially third choice goalkeeper.
If you sign him, he's coming in as first or second choice, isn't he?
No.
Isn't he?
Not first choice.
So why would you sign him?
Exactly. That's my point. Unless Gaeta or Wayne Hennessy leaves, then why would we spend 8 million on a third choice goalkeeper?
But I don't think that's what the club hierarchy will think they're doing, because it makes so little sense that I just don't think they'd do that.
Yeah, that's why it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of what happens with Gaeta and Wayne Hennessy. But it's a bit surprising. I didn't expect Mignolet out of everyone to be linked with Palace, because there's been no suggestion that...
I genuinely forgot he existed.
Yeah, exactly.
Until he was linked with Palace. I just, oh, right, yeah, him.
I mean, he could probably go do a decent job somewhere else abroad, or maybe like one of the newly promoted sides in the Premier League. But
I can only think that they don't rate one of our goalkeepers at the moment, and that can be Hennessy.
Yeah, it makes sense. If they don't rate Gaeta and rate Hennessy, then that'd be worrying. But
is there an argument after the off-field difficulty with Hennessy this season that they might just want to be getting shot of him?
I've said it two seasons ago, I think. It's never going to work with Hennessy. Just try to sell him, but it seems like it's not going to happen. He's just at the club. There's no connection between Hennessy and the fans, and I feel like regardless of how good Hennessy plays, he's never going to be as successful at Palace. I just don't see it happening. So I don't know why we still have him at the club, but I doubt he's going to be sold.
Yeah, I think that Hennessy over time has been a little bit of a weak link in our defence, and I know there are some supporters out there that do strongly back him, and I understand why, because he's a big keeper and for certain games he's very good and he's got the height, etc. But overall, I'm not a big fan of Hennessy, and quite clearly you need to have two very good keepers in the Premier League. So if they are thinking of bringing in Mignolet, then perhaps, yeah, they're looking to shift out Hennessy.
I think it'll be good for Wayne as well, as much as for us. It's just, it's not going to work out at Palace. Even when he did play good, there were always, like, for that one or two months, there were still critics saying, oh, he's just playing like a normal goalkeeper. So it's just never going to work out. Just sell him, but we'll see what happens.
The transfer rumour mill's gears won't stop grinding, and one name which is now back into the mix is Wilf Zaha. It had all gone quiet, but now Arsenal are prowling again. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show, where James Howard of Back of the Nest Pod has just informed me that he managed to get a pint in London for £3.50. That's a bargain. That's coming cheap. One man who won't is Wilf Zaha. Arsenal are interested yet again. How much are you charging?
How much am I charging? 70 minimum. there's no reason to sell Wolf. But I don't feel like Arsenal can afford that. Well, it doesn't seem like it anyways.
Well, I'm very confused about Arsenal's transfer business because we keep hearing they've got 40 million quid. Yeah. And they're now being linked with 15 players who cost 40 million quid. Someone's fibbing somewhere. Maybe the expectation is that they're going to shift some players off the wage bill and suddenly they will have room to manoeuvre.
Yeah, I can only think that if they're going to pay 40 million, it's got to be some part exchange as well. But going back to Wilf, you know, he was only going to go if he was going to get Champions League football, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's what he said.
So, you know, does he really want to go to Arsenal? He's a London club, so he probably does want to stay in London because we've talked about his family and his father, etc., personal reasons. So, yeah, I could see him going to Arsenal at some point, but maybe not this season. And I don't think Palace will sell him for what Arsenal prepared to pay.
And also, if we sell Wan-Bissaka, are we willing to sell Zaha as well? Because that is a massive time from the club. It'll be a big rebuild, in my opinion, if you sell both Wan-Bissaka and Zaha.
You sell them both, do you go down?
Well, it depends how we invest that money and who we bring in. But yeah, if you don't bring in quality players, there's of course a big chance.
Yeah, it'll be a bit of a struggle. But yeah, if you start, you know, getting players like Batshuayi on board, maybe one or two others, then I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to rebuild and maintain our sort of mid-table, possibly bottom half position next season without Wilf.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of the time, Wilf is the difference for us. I think this season just gone, maybe not as influential as the one before. I think there's other reasons why we haven't performed, not just because of Wilf. Striker positions, you know, he's lying on Benteke maybe too much. Beginning of the season, we had injuries. We were playing wingers like Townsend up front. We really shouldn't be playing up front. So, you know, if we get a proper striker in like Batshuayi, I don't know, Tammy Abraham or someone like that, if we ever get players of that quality, I don't know. But I think there is life after Wilf. And life after Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But it might take a season to rebuild. But would we go down, Johnny? I don't think we would if we did replace those players fairly quickly.
But I also feel like if we do sell Wilf, let's say we sell Wan-Bissaka next week and Arsenal want Wilf on the deadline day, even if they offer the 70 million, I don't think we'll sell him. Because it's just too little time to get the players in. So I feel like if Arsenal are really serious about this, they'll come in and get him before the couple of weeks before the actual deadline is.
But Arsenal traditionally like a desperation deadline day signing. But they've done it before.
It makes no sense on Palace's half to sell him. It regardless of how much they offer, I doubt Arsenal are going to offer over 70 million anyways.
They're not.
Yeah, so
do you trust the board to do things that make sense?
Yeah, in terms of transfer signings, of course there's been some dodgy signings, but with the money that we could potentially bring in from selling them both, over 100 million, I do trust the board to bring in the players, the right players. There might, of course, be one or two players who you don't work out, but that's just football. But yeah, overall, yeah, I do trust them.
Yeah, I think I trust the board with not selling players at the last minute and dropping us right in it, because that would drop us in it if we didn't have replacements for Wilf and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Well, Aaron Wan-Bissaka may be a bit different because I think the fullback's a bit easier to replace. And we've also got Ward, who I still rate quite highly. I know some people don't, but I think he's still a very good player and he can do a good job. But losing Wilf at the last minute and not being able to replace him, yeah, that would have a big effect on us. So I trust the board in not allowing a player of his quality to go at the very last minute. But you never know in this game.
Yeah, what's odd with Wilf is he was dropped as well. Well, he wasn't dropped. He didn't start for Ivory Coast, I think it was yesterday. Was the game yesterday? Yeah, so it's confusing. Wan-Bissaka, he's dropped, and now Wilf, he's not starting for Ivory Coast. But I don't feel like that has anything to do with the Arsenal transfer rumours, but just weird.
Crystal Palace aren't being linked with all that many players. Mm-hmm. Not being linked with certainly star players of the kind you would need to replace Zaha. Does that mean he's not going, or does it mean you're not prepared?
I feel like it means more of he's not going. They must have had the conversation with Wilf when the season ended. So I feel like it's a bit weird, the fact that we're not really linked significantly with any player. It was Mignolet, there's been rumours about us being linked with players abroad. But yeah, I feel like the club has had a discussion with Wilf, I guess, and they're pretty sure that he's going to stay.
If they'd had that discussion and Wilf had said, yeah, I'm not going anywhere, couldn't they or he release a statement saying, I'm staying at Palace?
But there's no point. It's just, regardless, even if he does release a statement, there will always be rumours. Wilf has said that he's happy. There was a documentary on YouTube where Wilf was in, and he said that he was happy, but it still doesn't change the fact that Arsenal are linked with him. So even if you do release statements, the rumours will still be there. So it doesn't really change a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a view on this that as a club, and you know, with Steve Parish in charge, he's not going to go after players at the moment, because if you start signing players now, then you're paying wages throughout the summer. And why pay wages throughout the summer when you're not actually?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know how it works.
I've heard that argument.
That's a smart point. I've never heard about it.
So I think that's one of the reasons that sometimes we sign players at the last minute, is to save on those thousands every week. That kind of like, well, they'd be getting fit anyway when they're at pre-season with the other club, so let's leave it to the last minute. But I think that, you know, you've got to realise that Wilf's in Africa, he's in a tournament at the moment, so he's not communicating with anyone probably. Everyone else has been on holiday for 6 weeks. They'll all be back in training, I think, from the beginning of July. And I think that's when you're going to see a bit more evidence or concrete evidence of, you know, transfers happening or potential transfers happening and discussions about who's coming in, who's going.
Yeah.
If Wilf goes, obviously Palace fans would be gutted. Who are the players who, if the club signed them, you would forgive them for selling your star?
I've never really thought that deeply about it. First of all, Batshuayi. I think he'll be smart signing what he'd done last season. Reinvesting that money in him would be good. And other than that, I'm not too sure, because there hasn't been really anything that has come to me that to say that Wilf is leaving for me to think about, oh, who we should bring in. I really haven't thought about it. I don't know about you, James, but
yeah, no, I think it's not that easy to replace. You're not going to replace him, to be honest with you. And I think it's not a question of, you know, forgiveness. I think it's a question of just accepting that he's got a price, and whether we value him at 80 million or 90 million. Whatever somebody, you know, the club value him at. I mean, I have my own valuation of him, and I think that if he was to go, then he has to go at that price. Otherwise, he shouldn't go. So if he goes, he goes. You know, and best of luck to him. I'd prefer him to stay, but if he goes, I'm not going to start shouting at the owners of Palace and say, why did you let him go? Because they got a decent price for him.
Yeah, and as you said, realistically, I don't see one particular player being a replacement for Wilf. It's just very hard.
So would you go about it in terms of trying to strengthen the entire squad rather than bring in just one star?
Yeah, I think that makes more sense. And also, when you bring in that one star, let's say he does end up like Benteke, not in the first season, because when Benteke did come in, he did score that 17 goals that people forget about. But let's say the star has a good season and then drops off, then you get into a bit of a sticky situation where you might have spent lots of money on him and now you can't really send him on for anything. So I'd rather invest on a whole squad rather than one big player.
Yeah, and I would rather invest on younger players as well than what we've sometimes done, is we've gone to the wrong end of the 20s and paid top dollar on players that maybe, yeah, are proven. But
who springs to mind?
Trying to think of a player that maybe is coming at that end of the age.
I'm not too sure.
We don't really spend that sort of money, do we?
Yeah, lately we haven't. Anyways, we can't.
So. But I don't. I mean, I know we were talking about some defenders coming in. You know, the other week we were talking about
Max Aarons
and Chelsea player, was it, the who's in the doesn't get in the first team, what's his name,
Fakayo Tomori, Reece James, Christensen,
I think you're talking about
English player
Hudson.
Cahill.
So you know, you'd probably pay quite a lot of money for him. I'd rather not. I'd rather just by sort of, if you got 80 million for Wilf, I'd rather sort of split that in three and say, look, let's pay a chunk of, say, I don't know, 20 odd thousand for three different players that have got age on their side, and hopefully one of those players will come really good.
But it will be difficult, especially if you're going for class young players, because they're probably going to be on decent wages where clubs don't want to get rid of them, and plus the money as well. That's a problem with younger players, is that just like Wan-Bissaka, we say he's 21 and he's still got so much potential. That's why we could put 50 million on him. Whereas if Wan-Bissaka was 28 years old, then no one would pay 50 million. So I think it'll be more expensive if we do go for younger players.
Is that the approach you'd want, though, rather than going for 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds who are ready?
Yeah, that should be the approach. I feel like the younger squad, such as players like Max Aarons, at least you can build them and potentially make them go on to the next level. Whereas if you buy more experienced players, yes, experience does matter, but I feel like in our squad right now, we do have decent enough of experience. And I always say this to myself, I feel like at times people overrate experience. I feel like, yes, it is needed, but not too much. I'd rather go for talent rather than experience.
Yeah, and I quite like the idea of, you know, being able to find another Jamie Vardy, you know, from the lower leagues. And the thing is, you know, it's out there. You know, the point is that with that money, you could spend it on 10 players and then you only need one Jamie Vardy to come along and you're
laughing. But then again, can you imagine what the fans will say if you sell Wilf and bring in 10 players? It's like when we got promoted, we brought in so many players, and some like Campagna, there was Moran, there's just so many players and none of them got a chance. So it's about, I don't think the fans will be happy if we done that, if we sold Wilf and brought in 10. Maybe if we brought in 2-3 quality young players that have got potential, then yeah, but not, I wouldn't go and spend all the money on just basically a new squad.
So maybe spend the money on 2 players and then just the rest of it then just speculate on some lower leagues.
Don't invest, reinvest it all in one if you don't need to. I don't feel like we need 10 new players, probably like 2 or 3, depending on the position.
The thing about that speculation, though, and I like that idea, but even if you get them cheap, it's not just the financial expense, because if you put them in the team, there's risks there as well. So are we talking about signing them and just having a look?
Well, that's the problem, because you've got only a certain amount of players you can have in the squad. So they are not necessarily going to have a chance to perform and show what they can do and, yeah, get match fitness and. So it's difficult. I think that there's a balance here where you can't get too many, like you say, DR, but, you know, maybe 2 or 3 and then a couple of decent signings. Just spread it around. Just don't spend all that money on 1 or 2 big players that maybe might not fit in with the system that Roy's always playing.
If these guys do go, you've got to be careful how you spend that money. You spent well in the past, and coming up, it's time for Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to Love Sport Radio. It's the Crystal Palace fan show, and it's time for our Legend of the Week. Guys, who have you gone for this week?
So this week we've gone for Sir Steve Coppell.
Sir.
Yeah. Inverted commas. But yeah, Steve Coppell, manager of Palace at the age of 28, been manager on and off for 4 times now. Fantastic club servant. Got us to the 1990 FA Cup final for the first time ever. What an experience that was. We went to a replay. We were nearly, I think, about 10 minutes away from winning that. And if we had, we'd have been in Europe for the first time. And in fact, Man United, who beat us, ended up winning the Cup Winners' Cup that next season. And then the following year, we did arguably what Leicester did. We didn't win the league, but we came pretty much close to winning it. We came in 3rd place. And what a season that was. That was brilliant. And he's brought through some really good players.
This is like a educational lesson for me, because when Steve Coppell was manager, I don't think I was in this world. Like, literally.
Well, it's interesting when someone becomes a club legend for their performance as a manager, because Koppel, of course, was really well known as a player for United and England as well. James, did you admire him as a footballer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was a young lad and, you know, I remember seeing him. It would have been on TV, obviously, but I remember seeing him on TV playing for England. Fantastic winger, very quick, very skillful. But, you know, everyone in football holds him in high esteem. I've never heard a bad word said about him, to be honest.
Who would you compare him to in terms of managerial style nowadays? Would you say he's a bit like Roy, or would you say he's a bit like Pardew?
He's braver than Roy, isn't he? I mean, that Reading team that he brought up were quite gung-ho, all things considered.
Yeah, I'd say it's a bit similar to Bournemouth, yeah, Eddie Howe. I think tactically, Steve was brilliant. I mean, I remember watching games and, you know, not a lot happened until half-time, and you think, oh, there's a weakness here and it's not quite working. But after a while, you knew that Steve Koppel would change things at half time and we would come out a far better team. He was a brilliant tactician, and we got a lot of criticism at the time because we were not as bad, I wouldn't say as bad, but as Route 1 as Wimbledon at the time. They were the real sort of Route 1 boys, and we were sort of put in a similar bracket to them. But we did have a lot more skill, you know, with Wright and Bright, Sulaco, Jeff Thomas, Andy Gray, you know, at one time. I mean, we had, I think I counted up to 5 England internationals at one time, if you include Nigel Martin that was in goal. We had Andy Gray, Jeff Thomas. Andy Gray only had one international appearance. And then you had Ian Wright. We definitely had at least four internationals at one time. Possibly one more, actually, I can't think.
Let's go back to the beginning of this story, because Koppel took over as boss unbelievably young. How did that come about?
Yeah, we had an injury, so he couldn't play football anymore. And Palace were struggling. This is, you know, mid-80s. We were struggling, probably languishing at the bottom end of the second tier of football. We were, you know, supposedly the team of the 80s. It didn't go quite well, and we lost a lot of players. And he came in and he had a real tough job on his hands, because he had the old guard of Jim Cannon and co. And then he brought in some new players, younger players like Ian Wright. And I think that sort of upset the apple cart. But he was very shrewd and he managed to deal with it very well. And I read the autobiography on Steve Koppel. It's a really good book to read. And, you know, and it explained the situation that he had. And at that age, you know, only 28 when you think about it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's tough, yeah. So he had to not only, you know, get new players in on the cheap because we didn't have any money, but he also had to gel them with the old guard who weren't really happy with all these sort of youngsters coming in and sort of upstaging them. And then suddenly he got things clicking. And it was really good.
And also, you need a lot of respect, don't you, as a 28-year-old being a manager, I guess. So that was another big challenge.
Made slightly easier if you've got 42 England caps. But you are spot on.
20, yeah, it's just I'm trying to think. Wilf is 26? Just imagine. Yeah.
Imagine
Wilf
as a
in 2 years' time as a Palace manager.
That would be quite something. We're joined on the line by back of the nest very own Nick Gillard, who's called into the show on 0208 70 20 558. Nick, how do you remember Koppel?
Very, very fondly. Yeah. Hello, you lot. Hope you're doing all right. We were getting crowds of 5,000 when he first came in. And it was the way he built it up, but he was just so erudite. He was obviously intelligent, you know, and there are intelligent footballers about now. There always have been, but he stood out, and he was one of the only footballers I know that had a degree. And to put a trust in somebody that young, Ron Nodes, you know, fair play to him for that. I was just thinking if I could think of somebody modern day, and it's really Frank Lampard chucking himself in at Derby. But it was the way he built the team and the style. He knew we liked wingers. The season we finished third, I mean, the speed we had, we hit other teams on the counter. We had Sulaco, we had McGoldrick. I mean, these players went on to great things, and so many of his team became managers as well. Likes of Southgate, Pardew. So it seemed to rub off on the rest of the players. And, of course, the semi-final against Liverpool, that's one of the greatest Palace moments ever.
Here's one for you all. Of course, people in my generation know Coppell best for the Reading team he brought up to the Premier League in 2003, kept them there until 2009. He then had a spell at Bristol City, a spell at Portsmouth as director of football, but that was the last time he was in English football. That was back in 2014. Where's he gone from a Premier League point of view?
He's been in America a lot. Our American New York correspondent often sees him in the football factory, which is a big bar.
So he's working hard then?
Yeah, he's enjoying retirement. I know he was involved with... Did you mention Crawley? He was involved there for a bit.
Yeah.
He had a notoriously short reign at Man City. I think they were on their way down, weren't they, at that point? But he couldn't handle the pressure, so lasted, was it 30 days?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, Nick. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was all sort of a bit too much for him, a bit overwhelming, wasn't it, at that time?
Yeah.
He did admit to that. I've just actually looked up before I knew we were talking about him, and he's actually been in India for the last couple of seasons, managing some couple of Indian clubs in their Super League, which was interesting. Yeah. I didn't know about that until tonight. So he is still in work. He hasn't actually retired, which is funny enough. But Nick, go on.
No, go on, carry on.
I was going to say, I've got a funny story that I mentioned, I'd say. Well, he used to have a really nice car, and it was a red Vauxhall Calibre, and it was like a Vauxhall Calvia, but it had all the spoilers and everything, and it wasn't tacky. It looked really nice. And it was a limited edition, and it was only, we've subsequently found out, it was only like 100 made or something like that. And by coincidence, my brother at the time had the same car, same colour. And I don't know if you remember, the training ground was in Tooting. And the physio at the time, David West, he used to do private consultations for anyone apart from football players. And my brother and I went down there one afternoon to Tooting, to the training ground, driving in my brother's car. And there was it was really nice because you got to see the players. You sort of sit on a bench getting your treatment with a football player next to you. It was like that. It was brilliant. But anyway, building up, that wasn't the point I was going to say, but we were actually driving into this training ground, and there was a match going on. It was just a inter-club match, practice match or whatever. And Steve Coppell was actually playing. And although he was injured, he would still play, which is really nice. But he obviously had to sort of, you know, be careful. But he was playing. And he just stared at us driving because, of course, we realised that we had the same car. And I honestly think he thought someone had stolen his car.
Just moving it for him. Exactly. Just borrowing it.
But it was quite funny. It's just a memory that we've got to this day. And I think I actually caught up with him once and told him the story and said, oh, by the way, that was our car. But yeah, lovely guy. And I've got so many fond memories of him.
So where does he rank in terms of your all-time Crystal Palace legends?
For me, number one as manager, because he took a rubbish team and, you know, took us to third in the league. It's just a shame the team broke up so quickly. He brought a lot of support into Crystal Palace. Is it fair comparing managers with players? But we couldn't do it, because we ummed and ahed, but you couldn't do Palace legends without mentioning Steve Coppell. So, yeah, definitely top five.
And do you think we'll see him back in the Premier League, or has that ship sailed?
Yeah, it's like George Graham. He's never coming back either, is he? I think
he's a bit younger than George Graham.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
What about... He had four spells, didn't he? Apparently at Palace.
Yeah.
So that's a bit unusual. You never see one manager have four spells at one club.
Well, he was there when Simon Jordan came in, wasn't he? And they just didn't see eye to eye. And I heard Simon Jordan on a podcast talking about it, and he was just saying that they just weren't matched. And it was really, really hard for him to let him go because he knew how much he was held in high esteem by the fans. I mean, Simon Jordan was a fan. He didn't want to let him go, but he felt it was the only thing he could do to take the club forward. So I think that was it then, because ever since he's gone, everybody said, oh, yeah, let's bring Steve back whenever we've been in times of trouble. Sounds like a song, doesn't it? He'd be the one to do it. But, yeah, I think he's too old for it now. Same as Alan Kirbishley. Everybody's been waiting for Alan Kirbishley to return to football, but he never quite did he?
No, it's very, very true. That would be an odd version of a Beatles lyric, wouldn't it? When I find myself in times of trouble, Steve Coppell comes to me. Nick, thank you ever so much for your call. He's a wonderful player, and that is why he's this week's Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, where we've had the news that Besiktas have apparently sanctioned the signing of Yaro Riederwald. Where did it all go wrong for him?
I really don't know. I don't think his performances on the pitch. It seems like whatever's happened is off the pitch. Whenever he has played, he has looked decent. It's not like he's looked out of place. So it's just so odd. He's got talent there, but he doesn't get game time. So I guess it's something that maybe the manager sees in training that he doesn't like of him. Maybe his attitude. I'm not too sure, but. I'm surprised that he's still at the club, to be fair. The fact that January he didn't leave, last summer he didn't leave, so it's a bit odd. But let's see, another year, another Riederwald rumour. Let's see if he manages to escape or is he still at the club?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that he might not fit the system. He might not be able to go elsewhere because we paid a lot of money for him and he's on high wages, so we have to keep him. And, you know, quite clearly he's an international and he's a good young player. So if there's somebody out there and it fits and we're prepared to let him go for whatever amount of money it's going to cost or we're going to get for him, then perhaps it's time for him to move on. I mean, when I've seen him play, I don't know whether it's fair to say that he hasn't performed because he hasn't really been given that much of an opportunity. But I've always felt that he didn't look particularly sharp or fit, and maybe a touch on the overweight side.
Yeah, but I feel like, I know what you're talking about, but that's the shirt he wears.
Right.
Like, it's not player fit or something like that. And that's why there was just, when he came out in the first pre-season game, last pre-season, everyone was looking at him like, wait, is he Jairo Riederwald, the footballer, or what's going on? Because he did look so big. But apparently he doesn't wear the player's kit, so I don't know.
The interesting thing about all of this is that Jairo Riederwald was the Matthijs de Ligt of his generation. He was this highly rated young Dutch centre-half, and various people were a bit surprised when Palace got him. Are you surprised it didn't work out?
Yeah, I am. It's just, as I said, it's not... when I've seen him play, he hasn't looked out of place. And sometimes it takes a season or two for a player to get used to the Premier League and the style. As we saw with Max Meyer, he had some good games, but he didn't always consistently start last season. So it's a bit weird, even when some players haven't performed, whereas when we talked about James McArthur and Jeffrey Schlupp, they've played, but it seems like Riederwald has never really got the chance, and the chance that he did get, which was, I think, it was in a League Cup, I remember, at Swansea. I think there was another League Cup game, but it was just very minimal. So it's so weird that he's got talent, from what I've seen, but he just, for some reason, just doesn't get the opportunities to show himself.
Yeah, well, we're not really playing that sort of Dutch style of football, are we? Maybe that's what he expected to come, because didn't he come on the back of
Frank de Boer?
Frank de Boer signing. Yeah. So, you know, at that time we were planning to play expansive. I don't know. I mean, that's what Frank de Boer thought, but Paris thought the other.
Yeah, after four games, that was definitely
it was
cancelled.
Supposed to take. It was supposed to be an integrated system, and it seemed to happen overnight, and that's what got us into trouble. But so he clearly is a good player. I'm not disputing that, but you know, after Frank de Boer went, then we weren't going to be playing that type of football that maybe he was used to or expecting us to play. Oh. And he's just been struggling.
I wonder how much he's worth, though. No, I can't remember.
Eight mil?
Did we buy? 8 mil.
Yeah, about what we paid for him, wasn't it?
I guess so, yeah. But Beşiktaş, would they be willing to pay 8 mil?
Well, these days. Yeah. You'd think if you pay 8 mil for him, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, then it'd be going up in price anyway if he'd have been playing regular football.
For you, is he just the symbol of that De Boer tenure?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's just unfortunate. It's just an unfortunate time. Everyone's held their hands up and said, look, it was a mistake. And we move on, and he's part of it, yeah.
Yeah, it just came out to my head. He was linked with Swansea, going to Swansea, but apparently he didn't want to go there. That's why he was at Palace. So hopefully he likes Beşiktaş and Turkey, I guess. That's the next opportunity.
What was it like to be a Palace fan in that rather short time that De Boer was in charge?
Yeah, it was a bit strange. It was you kind of willing it to work, but you thought, oh, this is a bit risky and we're going to make a mistake. And you just felt like...
Was it not exciting?
You're on the edge of your seat the whole time.
I was so excited. I was like, this is the next step. You know, we've had the Tony Pulis's and them. I feel like Frank de Boer, this was the next step, different type of football. I was actually excited. Then first game comes along and we're losing 3-0 to Huddersfield. I was like, okay. And then from then on, it just went downhill. But I was surprised how many games he managed. It was only, what was it, four league games? Five?
I think that it started to improve, but it was too late by then. I think we had a really good game at Burnley away, and I think that was 0-0.
When Lee Chung-young passed it back and then Burnley scored. Yeah, we lost 1-0, that 1-0.
Sorry, yeah, 1-0, but quite clearly we were well ahead of Burnley and playing really well. That was probably the first game where you thought, actually, you know, maybe this system will work. But I think the club had already made a decision to let him go.
Yeah, I feel like off-the-pitch stuff with Frank de Boer seems like... is a reason why he got sacked in the first place rather than on the pitch. I don't feel
really?
Like, yeah.
What was going on off the pitch?
Yeah, that's the with disagreement with players such as Luka Milivojevic, he was playing centre-back. It's just, I feel like what happened off the pitch, it just cost him his job rather than on the pitch. Four games, of course he's not going to get, you know, brilliant results in four games. It's very hard in the Premier League. You have to give him time. But the rumours, what happened off the pitch, it makes sense why he did get sacked after four games. And we slate Parrish for some of his decisions, but it turned out to be the right one because at the end of the day, we managed to stay in the Premier League and Roy Hodgson, even though we criticise him, we're still in a good position right now.
Has this put you off making risky managerial signings, bringing in managers from abroad?
It's a hard one. It just depends on who it is. But I guess it might have put the board off in a way that I don't feel like the club are in a position right now where we could do the risky signings. But I'm not too sure. What about you?
Yeah, I don't think he had really much of a track record as a manager.
Yeah, he went.
He was in Italy, wasn't he? And I think he had issues there with players. So I think they could have done their due diligence a bit better. And thought, well, actually, I think in the future, if we are going to go for a manager from abroad, then we need to go for someone that's actually, you know, achieved something.
Ajax, he
rather
was
than achieve something as a player.
Yeah, Ajax, he was an okay manager.
He was better than okay. He was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Ajax, I mean, that's in the Dutch league.
Yeah,
Ajax
what I'm saying.
Is streets ahead of all the other clubs.
It's a hard one. You just have to take the risk. It's like you can't guarantee a manager. Unless Mourinho comes in, is he going to be brilliant at Palace? Who knows? He was okay. He was brilliant at other clubs, but you saw what happened at United, and it might be the same at Palace.
It is a tough one. You're expecting another year of Roy. Once he's gone, would you most like to get in a manager from the Premier League?
I'll just keep it short. Rafa Benitez would have been nice, but it's
could that happen now?
No, I don't think it will happen now. If he left next season, then there's that potential. I could see Roy retiring and then coming in, but right now, I don't see it happening. He'll get snapped up by another club.
I mean, I'd like Eddie Howe, but he'd probably go to Arsenal.
Well, Rafa Benitez to Crystal Palace. You heard it here first. I can already see the back page of tomorrow's Daily Mirror. You'll have to join us next week on the Crystal Palace Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.